The place you work is ideally diverse. The people you work with, a mix of genders and colors and ages. We'll focus on the ages in this hour. The millennial generation, roughly people born between 1980 and 2000, is now the most numerous in the United States. There are more millennials than baby boomers alive. The boomers are often the bosses because they're older and more experienced, and they tell some tales about millennials in the workplace, tales which our guest addresses in her book. Crystal Kadakia is the author of The Millennial Myth, Transforming Misunderstanding into Workplace Breakthroughs. Crystal Kadakia is a speaker, trainer, consultant, and, of course, author. She blogs for The Huffington Post and other outlets on millennials and the modernizing of the workplace, and delivers similar messages to corporate audiences. Her company is called Invati Consulting. Crystal Kadakia, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Joffrey. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. First of all, how did you end up here from a degree in chemical engineering?
So I started out in chemical engineering and quickly realized that, you know, I wasn't into problem-solving machines. I was the person in the manufacturing plant always asking about how the people are doing and are we working together well as a team? And from there, it really took me down this journey into training and human capital within companies, and the media started talking a lot about millennials. And at the time, I actually had a boomer who was directly reporting to me, and I was her manager, and we were designing programs for millennials. And it was just fascinating, the conversations we would have about what we were hearing in media versus what we were seeing in real life. And so that really spawned a whole idea for me around, you know, there's something here where we all are not getting quite the right information we need. In fact, we're getting too much information on the topic, and it's become really hard to sort opinions from facts and from what's really going on to what is viral.
And in fact, you report cringing in the third paragraph of the book at having to identify as a millennial. Why?
Yeah, so it's funny. You'll actually see this a lot with millennials. They'll say, oh, I'm not that kind of millennial. I'm not the millennials you're thinking of. And so I talk about cringing as a millennial, and because there is such a negative, sensationalized view of what a millennial is. And you have to immediately overcome that in the first sentence of, well, I'm not those kinds of millennials. And it is kind of very age dependent. If anyone looks at a young person, they might be making a remark about millennials and then immediately say, well, I'm not really talking about you. Of course, I'm not talking about you. And it's like, but you know, you are, because I am a part of that group of young people. And because we have that perception, we sort of have to overcome it in that moment.
Well, in fact, I've had people, when I call them for references, say, well, you know, she's a millennial, but she's not like a millennial.
Yeah, exactly. You got it. That's exactly how it sounds.
Wow. So you gave a provocative statement, I noticed, in one of your TEDx talks. You said, we don't want to work for you. But there's a second part to that, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's the idea that we don't want to work for companies that are stuck in this traditional mindset, right, that have this perception of millennials, because having that kind of negative perception of millennials also means you sort of have a negative perception of the future workplace. And so instead of thinking about, well, how can we modernize our workplace, you're kind of stuck in this, well, this is how we've always done things. So millennials don't want to work for you. They want to work with you. They see themselves as an integral part of the future, and they see that the world has changed. They've grown up in that very quickly changing world with digital technology. And companies that recognize that will really start to grow and see positive culture being built. From everywhere, from the leadership down to our day-to-day relationships, where we might often get frustrated working with one another, you know, whether it's across ages, colors, genders, so on, we often get frustrated. But starting with these kinds of negative perceptions really doesn't help. And we do want to work with you.
So how would you respond then to the belief that is still held on to, I'm sure, by many people in the workplace, that the younger people at least have to pay some dues and, you know, show some good faith and build up a reputation?
Yeah, I think my response to that is, well, when does that stop? I think the prevailing conception is that millennials are just graduating from college. They're the first-time employees. And today, millennials are aged between 22 and 36. Oftentimes, they're managers, and they're managing boomers, just like I was. And so there's a point where you got to say, okay, they have paid their dues. And at this point, we're still kind of parroting the, well, they've just graduated college, they have a lot of things to learn. Nope, we're already in the workforce, and we're here, and we are making changes, we are stating our opinions, and that those opinions are no longer just based off of college years or school years, they're based off of real work experience.
So ultimately, we're not talking just about how the workplace responds to people of a certain age group, but just how the workplace itself will be like in the future, that it will obviously change over time. The question is who it's changed by and how quickly it changes.
Yeah, that's exactly the question. That's the nail on the head. Is it going to be the millennials who are constantly kind of expressing these opinions and frustrations, often not in a way that boomers or the traditional leader is going to respect it, right?
Right. Oh, but so like, go ahead. Go finish your thought.
Yeah, but so that's definitely a piece of it, is how do millennials frame their opinions in a way that can actually be integrated into the status quo? But it's not necessarily always working.
We will talk about how to reconstruct the workplace for the future. The book is called The Millennial Myth, Transforming Misunderstanding into Workplace Breakthroughs. Crystal Kadakia, herself a millennial, wrote the book and is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back and talk more with her and take phone calls and emails from you when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. On the Jefferson Exchange, on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Crystal Kadakia, speaker, trainer, consultant, and author. She writes about how workplaces can adapt and incorporate millennials and how millennials can adapt and incorporate to the workplace. The book is called The Millennial Myth, Transforming Misunderstanding into Workplace Breakthroughs. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about how to make workplaces better places to work for everybody of all ages. 800-838-3760 to join us by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Crystal, you give the boundaries of the generation as 1981 and 1996. I've seen others say between 1980 and 2000, but to go more broad, isn't the very idea of a generational cohort something of an artificial grouping?
Yeah, it absolutely is. It's not exactly a hard and fast science. So generations, the groupings are really set by shared cultural experiences, specifically in those years where you're growing up. And so when you look at the grouping for millennials, it tends to shift, right? Some folks say, well, it ends at 2000s. Other people say 1995, 1996. I really look at it as that 1995, 1996 as the end point, because after that point, everybody who was born grew up with the internet, they grew up with PCs, they grew up with social media, and very quickly soon after that, smartphones. And so for the folks after 95, the story that's taking place in their lives is that they don't remember a world without the internet. And so that becomes a whole new generation right there. That's a significant enough event to say this is a different cohort. And that would be Generation Z, which they're still working on the name for. But you've got kind of the millennials before that who are kind of that bridge, right? They're kind of the last generation to remember the world without the internet. And that's fairly significant as an event.
That's interesting, though, because I hadn't thought about it, too. And when you think about events outside of just what the technological constructs are, but people born in 1995, 96 would be among the first to remember and live daily with the aftermath of 9/11.
Yes, exactly. And that's another huge, when you look at these historical events, there's often been economic events, events around peace, politics, war, so on. When you look at the events that have the most impact across generations, a lot of them tend to be innovations in technology, innovations in medicine, things that, you know, for example, maybe extended humans' lives by a significant amount, those sort of things have a lasting impression that changes the very expectations of how someone works and lives. So, I mean, you know, kind of to really boil it down, you know, multiple generations in general have gone through economic downturns. They've gone through periods of war, and wars were fought very differently, you know, 100 years ago compared to today, which, you know, to your point around 9/11. And, you know, each of those has an influence on that generation. But when you look at these innovations that really advance society, that changes an entire expectation of how you work and live and creates sort of these generation gaps where we see today.
Right. So certain types of devices certainly are ubiquitous in today's world and weren't then. But let me get aside from just electronics and gadgets and just talk about the fact that it seems like just about any generation of workers will bristle at the rules of the previous generation, though, won't they?
Absolutely. And so that's why this is nothing new. Generations have come in and out of the workplace for generations, and every generation has complained about the youngest generation, right? I mean, there's always that, oh, kids these days, when I was their age, I had to walk 4 miles in the snow, barefoot, uphill both ways. That's the complaint from every generation. The difference is most generations got over it, right? We didn't spend the first 15 years of people entering into the workplace complaining and moaning about, oh, this new generation, I don't know how to deal with them. And the reason why we're stuck in that cycle is because of the huge volume of social media that continues to perpetuate these opinions. And it's kind of stopping us from moving forward. And there hasn't been that type of volume of media and quantity of opinions and information in any other generation.
We're talking to Crystal Kadaki about her book, The Millennial Myth, Transforming Misunderstanding into Workplace Breakthroughs, here on the Jefferson Exchange. So let's move into the impacts. I mean, do employers find themselves having to sort of rethink the way they work when they're addressing the habits that seem to come with millennials?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, over the last 5 years, I've given over 100 talks, talked to countless executives about this, and they're struggling. They're trying to mesh, you know, what it is that they do have in place with these changing expectations. And what they're really trying to understand, and I'm sure we all are trying to understand, is what's really meaningful. What actually is really fact and needs to be changed given these different expectations versus, you know, what's just kind of superficial. And so what you'll see a lot is there's a lot of organizations. I'm in Atlanta, and here in Atlanta, I've seen headquarters being moved closer to our public transportation, our MARTA, which is our subway system, our train system. You know, headquarters are physically moving locations to be nearer to the stops on the line. And then you've got organizations that are completely repainting all the walls, going to open office environments. And sometimes these changes work, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they attract millennials, and sometimes they don't. And it really depends on the leader's understanding, the leadership team's understanding of how superficial are these changes and how much do they really meet the changing expectations. So oftentimes splashing a new color of paint on the wall doesn't really make the difference, but creating a training around managers and giving feedback to new employees, that can create the difference.
Well, the first thing that the managers would need to understand, though, is the things that they tend to regard as negatives, and to figure out from perspectives of someone like you what they really are. So, for example, you point out that a lot of managers think that the millennials are lazy and entitled and are disloyal job hoppers who are disrespectful at work as well. Can you start pulling those apart and figuring out what the motivations are from the side of the person whose behavior is perceived in this negative way?
Yeah, so it's very important to notice that at the end of the day, we are all people. We're all employees. And there really isn't necessarily a right, wrong, negative, positive way to do things. Those are all constructs that we put forth onto those types of behaviors as individuals. We do that all the time, right? We make judgments all the time. Like, okay, this person's lazy because they don't want to show up exactly at 8 a.m. or they want to leave a little bit early to go pick up their kids. And, you know, that's actually what's happening, right? Millennials are having kids now. They're not just single. So they have a more legitimate reason, or so it appears. But when you think about things like that behavior of, well, I just want a little bit of flexibility in my hours. For millennials, it's coming from a perspective of, I've grown up in a world where I can take my work anywhere with me and I'm constantly connected. So if I'm expected to be instantly responsive to work when I'm at home, then when I'm at work, it should be okay for me to assess my own personal productivity, to figure out, do I need to be thinking, am I feeling like my energy is going down and because I have some stress at home right now that I need to address? And there's an expectation like, well, why doesn't it go both ways? If I can bring work back home with me, then some of home is certainly going to influence my work. And I think it's a different idea of productivity than what we've had in the past, where work and life were kind of very separate. And it's not only that they were separate, but the type of work we did had to be done at the workplace. And productivity is really tied to that. So that's just one example. When you even think about the words hard work or laziness, the actual definitions of those are changing, and they're always up to the individual. And different generations are going to see the same word and assign a completely different meaning to it. I'll give you another example. If as a millennial, I used to kind of dread when I'm at work getting pulled aside by a boomer who wants to tell me a 30-minute story about their cat throwing up over the weekend. Now, from a boomer's perspective, this is water cooler talk. This is me building relationships and so on. From a millennial perspective, wow, what a waste of time, right? That's not being productive. If I want to build a relationship with you, there's other ways I would do that than just standing by the water cooler. Maybe it's through smaller text messaging checkups, like, oh, hey, I heard your cat was sick. Sorry to hear that. Done. I'm done. And I can go back to work, right? So it's just there's different definitions of what is work, and we really have to realize that those definitions are changing because of the different ways people grow up.
So in your perception, is a millennial way of dealing with things to have more conversations with more people, just shorter ones?
I think it depends on the situation and the context. So, you know, for me personally, if I want to check in on someone and that's my intention, that's the objective, then yeah, it's going to be shorter text messages, maybe a quick Facebook message. But if I want to really connect with someone, the intention is I want to really either deeply catch up with someone, I have a problem that needs to be solved, I really want to know how someone's doing, I'm going to pick up the phone and call them, or I'm going to, you know, plan a time to come over to their house and hang out. And so I think it's very contextual. And I think what we often try to do is put people in a box with how they communicate. And, you know, I like to think of it as when the telephone was invented. And when the telephone was invented, there was now more options of how to communicate. People didn't necessarily walk a mile down the street anymore to physically call on their neighbor, even though, you know, that's actually what the word call meant at that time, right?
Call
you physically.
On someone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you physically called on someone. And you know that there's some grandmother who is complaining, like, why are you using that weird black box on the wall? Why are you being lazy? Go walk a mile down the road. And that's the exact same thing that's happening today, is we have more options to communicate, and those options are going to have a different reason. You're going to have different reasons for using those different options. So text messaging may be appropriate in certain situations. But if, you know, my best friend's mom just died, I'm not going to send her a text like, sorry to hear about your mom. Sucks. You know, it's my best friend. Her mom just died. I'm going to call her, or I'm going to go over to her house and be like, you know, is there anything I can do? Are you okay? And it's just contextual.
Crystal Kadaki is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking primarily about the workplace and how we can get people of different generations working more harmoniously. Her book is called The Millennial Myth, Transforming Misunderstanding into Workplace Breakthroughs. You can join the conversation on the Exchange and maybe share some stories from your own workplace about different generations working together and overcoming some misunderstandings. 800-838-3760 to join in by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. There's a fairly sharp wrap of the ruler on the knuckles for people who do refer to millennials as like those millennials in the workplace, because it is discriminatory, as you point out.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, hopefully you're starting to get a feeling that, these different things that we say, they actually have kind of different meanings behind them, depending on who you are. So when you're using words like lazy, entitled, and so on, if you use them for any other group, hands down, it would be considered discrimination. If I said all Caucasian male radio hosts are lazy and entitled, Jeffrey, you'd be really mad at me. that doesn't make any sense. And also, by the way, I don't know your ethnicity. So, that's a presumption, right?
It's a mystery.
It's a mystery. But it's just discrimination to say things like that. And right now, because we have so many people in power, right, who use those words, and we have people on these lower levels who are just like, I don't care enough to do anything about it. We're not doing anything about it. But in legal terms, we should be really careful, because those words are basically discrimination.
A lot of one coin, two sides in the book, where you show here's what the other side is thinking of this. So I want to get into some more of that, about the fact that some of the things that people rap on millennials for their reliance on technology. But the fact is they get a lot from technology. And as you point out, that access could make them a whole lot smarter than their parents.
Yeah, absolutely. So, one of the things that I do throughout the whole book is really look at things from a traditional mindset and a modern mindset. And by all means, it doesn't encapsulate all of the varying perspectives that are out there about these sort of things, because that's basically impossible. So when you think about things like technology and how it can actually help people, a good example of this is that I used to always get mad at my boyfriend for looking on his phone in the middle of a conversation. I'd be like, did you hear me? And he would hold up his phone and say, yeah, I was just Googling the thing you're talking about, and here's the answer, Crystal. So, even for me, right, as a millennial, I had to adapt my own way of thinking, like, okay, this person's not distracted right now. They're actually trying to contribute real-time knowledge that may help us move forward faster, instead of looking it up later or whatever the case may be. So now, and this was, by the way, this was like 5 or 6 years ago. And now I do this all the time in the middle of conversations, because it's just more efficient. It's more productive. And I'm finding that I'm able to learn about more things quicker than before. But I also need to be cognizant of how I used to learn, which was very immersive. And so there's, again, it's all contextual. There are certain times when the quick information helps me be more productive in the moment. But there's other situations where I really need to turn everything off and spend, 2 hours just reading something or studying something. And I have to be very intentional about that, because today it's really hard to do that without interruption. And these are the same sort of findings that I've found, across millennials in the workplace. And this is one of the biggest complaints of boomers and traditional mindset folks is, everyone's got their phone in meetings nowadays and they're not focusing, and you never really know. And so it's just starting from a curious perspective of, do you really know that they're distracted? Are you 100% positive that they're distracted? And in some cases they might be. They might be burned out by the meeting, and that's a clue for you to say this meeting is probably in some sort of cycle of stuck or frustration, it's not moving forward, or it's not relevant to that person. Or maybe they are actually doing something productive on their phone that's related to the meeting.
Well, then should the workplace allow for a certain amount of wandering? The baby boomers didn't get away with reading magazines in staff meetings, for example.
Yeah, I certainly think so. I think that the workplace needs to allow for wandering, because the kinds of work we're doing is changing. Personally, I can't be in front of a computer 8 hours a day like a machine. It just doesn't make me productive. I need to take breaks. I need to go walk outside. I need to be able to get a disconnect in order to return creative, in order to return with a more strategic mindset, which happens to be more of the things bosses are asking us to do today, right? The workplace today is about problem solving, being strategic, being creative, coming up with new ways to meet how fast-paced the world is changing. And we can't assume that, you know, working back-to-back meetings is the most productive way to contribute. We might want to unleash our talent in a different way today. And we may not have the exact answer for that right now. It is a bit of experimentation of what that might look like.
It probably must amuse you a little bit to hear about the baby boomers who resisted working in the gigantic offices with rows and rows and rows of desks, and yet they want to hold on to what they've got now and not offer something new to the next generation.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, with age comes having comfort of what we've always known. And I don't ding anybody for that. That's natural. It's a natural process of aging. What I don't like is when we automatically jump to conclusions that a different way of looking at things is wrong.
All right. Much more to talk about with Crystal Kadakia. Her book is The Millennial Myth, Transforming Misunderstanding into Workplace Breakthroughs. Back on The Exchange to talk with her and you if you'd like to call or email in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Crystal Kadakia, who lives in Atlanta. She's a speaker, trainer, consultant. Her company's called Invati Consulting, and she's an author as well, writes for the Huffington Post, and has written a book about blending different generations in the workplace from the perspective of someone like herself, who's from the millennial generation. Her book is called The Millennial Myth, Transforming Misunderstanding into Workplace Breakthroughs. She busts up the idea of millennials being lazy and self-serving and asking a lot of the boss, or at least points out reasons why people would perceive those things that way. Join us with your perceptions at 800-838-3760 by phone or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Let's take a phone call from Doreen in Arcata. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, Jeffrey.
Hey.
So, I just wanted to address this idea of millennials being bad employees. And I'd like to point out that the kind of deal between employees and employers has changed over the last maybe 30 years, you know. In a lot of ways, we're being offered a lot less. Wages have stagnated, and it's hard to really see yourself working really hard for a company when you feel disposable, you know. A lot of us are not being offered the same kind of retirement. We're not sure if Social Security is going to be around for us. You know, some of us may not have health care. And so it seems a little unfair that we would be expected to have loyalty to a company when the message that we keep getting is that we're disposable.
So loyalty is a real two-way street, you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
And I feel like that's kind of missing from the conversation. I mean, I hear this phrase, like, disloyal job hoppers, and of course we're all looking for the best opportunity that we can find, and why would you give your whole life to a company if you don't feel like they're going to take care of you?
Okay, excellent set of points. Let's get some response from Crystal. Thanks for that, Doreen.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, and that is exactly what I talk about. I mean, you couldn't have said it better. Loyalty should be a two-way street, and there's this idea, I often hear this, well, isn't working for the paycheck enough for millennials? Well, you know, that might have been true in previous generations, but that idea of working for a paycheck was more like for an extended period of time. There was an expectation that, okay, I'm not just working for a paycheck for this month or the next 6 months, but I'm going to have that paycheck coming in for years, and I could be a lifer at a company. Of course, that's completely changed today. And this isn't just, you know, a view put forth by millennials, but all generations are feeling this lack of stability with companies. And it's not just millennials that are quote unquote disloyal. the organizations aren't loyal to their employees anymore. And that's really well recognized by all generations. The problem is millennials specifically get this bad rap. And it's very much a story of skewed statistics. So, you know, we talk a lot about how millennials have job hopped in their early 20s. And a lot of it completely discounts the fact that millennials graduated during a global recession. They were the biggest generation to be underemployed. So not just unemployed, but working in jobs that maybe didn't line up with their degrees. And so, of course, the first time a job opens up that's more relevant, they're going to leave. It's just the nature of what was going on in the times. And that's often highly disregarded, along with the fact that companies are not really loyal to their employees anymore. And so it's kind of asking for a lot from people when the world is really all about what's in it for me today, because it's got to be. We know companies aren't going to take care of us. We know that government's not going to take care of us long term. So we've got to look out for ourselves. And that's the nature of the world today. And until that changes, that's how we see it.
I can understand that. I mean, certainly when you look at the kinds of things that companies do to workers, and particularly where it seems like shareholders are supreme and workers are an afterthought to a lot of people, that gets communicated to the folks who are doing the day-to-day work. But how then would an employer try to communicate to millennials, no, I really am serious about investing in you. I want to invest some time and money and training in you, and I want you to stick around for a while.
There's companies that do that really well, right? So there's longstanding companies who, from the beginning, invest in training their new employees. They don't treat them as disposable. So an example that comes to mind is Abbott Pharmaceuticals, for example. So when they bring new employees on board, they're investing in their talent. And not only that, they're showing them, here's a long-term career path. Here's what it could look like for you, and they work with them actively. You know, their managers are working with them actively every 6 months to really look at that plan and so on. So there's companies that do it. You all can also see the companies that don't do it, and there are a lot of companies in that realm as well that have churn and burn cultures, and even companies that are really well known today, right? Like Amazon, for example, they have constant churn and burn, and it's because their name is so big, everybody wants to work for Amazon, and Amazon knows it. So they're not necessarily hungry to keep talent right now in the short term. But that'll end up hurting them when they're looking for leaders in the future.
Another phone call here from Karine in Wairika. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Crystal Kadakia, the author of The Millennial Myth.
Hey, I'm a Gen Xer, and I work in tech. My experience working with millennials has been very positive. In fact, I lean on them a lot for their opinions when we're designing apps or websites. But one of the things that I really like about them is that their view of the world is, like, society is much more flat, and probably with each generation it gets more flat. And I mean by, like, there's not, people aren't, you know, superior. And I think, like, when I entered the workplace, you were expected to maybe revere your bosses in a way that wasn't necessarily appropriate, but just expected. And millennials, you know, maybe they're seen as disrespectful because they view, in my experience, they tend to view all people as people in a more flat way.
So it's all like we're equal. You can call your teachers by the first name and things like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. I think it's an advancement in our, you know, society.
Okay.
Yeah, we need more of you around to continue to influence anyone who does hold more of a traditional mindset. I mean, I think your observation is really on point, that millennials view the world in a more flat way. And I think a lot of that, again, comes from this idea of digital technology and social media, where it's like, if you were 14 and you could create a social media channel, you know, it doesn't matter how old you are, what you look like, or your gender or your ethnicity. If you make a contribution that people are really interested in and they want to follow, they'll follow you. And that's what millennials, and especially Generation Z, the next generation, that's what the idea that they're growing up with. Of, you know, it's all about our micro differences and what is it we're actually bringing to the table in terms of our work, in terms of our unique perspective. So I think it definitely does differ from the past, And I think it's a positive change as well. So yeah, we need more of Gen Xers helping to bridge that gap between the two generations.
We have an email here from Becca in Fern Ridge who says, I volunteer with a local watershed council. There are lots of millennials. I don't see a problem with them. They're all very friendly and appear to work hard. I'm a baby boomer. Also, I don't let myself get stressed over phones. Baby boomers, get over it, writes Becca.
Thanks, Becca. I love that. You know, it's, and I want to just make sure I say this. I'm not saying that all boomers have like a negative perception of millennials. That's not at all what I'm saying. I think that there's a traditional mindset, and I think that there's a modern mindset, and you can be any generation and fall into either of those categories.
I do notice the more we talk about this and get more people into the conversation that we're on the edge of saying the millennials and the boomers, like people sometimes say the blacks, you know?
Yeah. I mean, really, we're all okay, and we're all people.
All right, fair enough. I want to get into a portion of the book where you talk about how people do view some millennials as entitled, and your argument is, on the other side of the coin, that they are entrepreneurial. Entrepreneurial in what sense, Crystal?
Yeah, so, you know, oftentimes when we think about entitled behavior, the thing I hear leaders tell me the most is it's all about when millennials are asking for things really quickly, like they haven't put a lot of time in and they're asking for promotions. They're asking for flexible work hours. They're asking for access to senior leadership. And those sort of things sound entitled because a lot of times those are rewards that are given to you when you put the time in. So from a millennial perspective, again, growing up in a time where innovations occurred really rapidly and they were able to have insight into not necessarily senior leadership, but insight into what's going on in the world, right? Everything is Googleable. Things were really transparent. They grew up with role models who were able to do a lot with very little. Entrepreneurship in general, when you think about things like Mark Zuckerberg and looking at those folks as role models, it's like, wow, you really can start something in your garage and it ends up being something huge. So this idea of putting time in doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily that it's no longer valid. It's that it might not be immediately understood by millennials. Like it might be, well, what do I get for the time that I put in order to access X, Y, and Z rewards? So I think promotion, a lot of times it just needs to be explained that, hey, you need some situational leadership and you need some situational experience before you can get to that next level. But things like access to senior leadership, that might actually, in fact, help a millennial perform better. And that's something that they're used to, again, getting from the internet and so on, that like, hey, me having insight into the big picture actually helps me connect the dots, actually helps me perform. That's not a reward. That's a necessary part of performing. And that, again, comes from this kind of entrepreneurial spirit of, well, I can see sort of all the things that occur. I can wear multiple hats. And it's sort of like the idea of running a business in a way, like my role in a company, my mini role is I sort of treat it like I'm running a business.
You do name one of your managers. I want to make sure we don't get out of here without getting at least one case study in here. Ann Moder, you name in the book. How did she help you?
Yeah, so she was one of those people that really helped me continue to explore my potential. So as opposed to being someone who would say, oh, you know, You're totally entitled for wanting more challenging work or wanting to explore your strengths. I mean, you know, just focus on your job. She was not that type of manager at all. She was the kind of manager to actually sit down and respect the fact that I had this motivation to do more than what was just asked of me. And that's how she saw it, is, okay, she wants to do more than what's asked of her. That's great. That's an asset to the company. And so she would help me look for opportunities. She was my manager, so we would, you know, co-create my work plan to really take advantage of not just delivering the business priorities, but looking at where else I wanted to grow. And as long as I could handle it, she was fine with it. As long as I was delivering the results of my base business plan, of my work plan, then that was completely fine with her. And I think managers like that are really important. They're not just there to manage budget, time, schedule, or allocate resources. but they're there to create continuity and motivation for an employee to stay there longer term. So to the point of loyalty, you know, that's something that was really important to me, is that there is someone looking out for my growth. And even if the organization doesn't necessarily look out for your growth, if your manager does, it makes a huge difference.
So it's obviously incumbent upon a manager to figure out ways in which things can be flexed to allow things to be done somewhat differently, certainly in terms of hours and presence in the workplace and all that stuff, as long as the results that the manager is seeking are achieved.
Exactly. I mean, then it becomes a win-win situation, right? The business is getting what they need, the employee's getting what they need, and the manager, I mean, that should really be their job, is people management.
Let's give a final thought to something that actually can help everybody in the workplace, which is the fact that we all communicate by email now and all of the time. So how does any employee and any employer not become a slave to email?
That's a really big question, right? I think that there's definitely a sense of prioritization and managing expectations. So I think it's really important to realize, no matter what generation you are, you always are setting a precedent with who you respond to, how fast you respond. And so really thinking about that, especially the how fast you respond. If you don't want to be on the hook 24/7, don't respond to emails you get right away. And you'll set a different precedent. And things that are really important, life or death, or, you know, very critical to your job, respond to those right away. So just kind of creating a balance between priority and timing. Honestly, I can say that's what's worked, at least the best for me and the folks that I've talked to.
Okay, lots of interesting ideas in the book. It's called The Millennial Myth, Transforming Misunderstanding into Workplace Breakthroughs. Crystal Kadakia wrote it and joined us on The Exchange today. Crystal, thank you.